to Digital You podcast, the place where we explore the implications of living in a digital world. Often referred to as the fourth industrial revolution, digitalization is the major trend in industry, business and society, and it affects everyone, including you, both in your private life and at work. In this podcast, I interview people that are leaders of the digitalization transformation to see what we can learn from them in terms of mindset, approaches, best practices and traps to avoid. The goal is to make you better at what you do and helping you to be a digital citizen and professional in a rapidly changing world. In this episode, I meet with Ulla-Britt Fredin Hellqvist, a woman with a diverse background, including Volvo Cars, the Confederation of Swedish Industry, SSF and Mistra. These days, she mostly works as a board member and advisor for companies. And as we discussed, as we were preparing this, it's hard to stick a label on you, let's put it like that, but I've really been looking forward to this discussion because over the years that I've known you, I must say that I've really become very much impressed with the way that you work, the way that you think, your strategic thinking, the way that you connect people, and specifically the view that you have on a variety of different topics, including digitalization. And that's, of course, what we today are here to talk about. So for the listeners at the podcast, maybe you could start by giving a short introduction of who you are, what your background is, and what you're passionate about.
Thank you, John. I think that labeless is maybe the right word of me. I have been around for many years, more than 60 years, and I have a background. I studied, at Chalmers, and I have a master in engineering physics.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's who I am, open-minded, open to different things. And I only say that I have a degree in being logic. Maybe that's how I could.
So common sense logic goes a long way to solving many problems.
Yeah, and after Chalmers, I started to work for Volvo Cars, and I stayed there for 22 years in different positions. And actually, the first one was as a system analyst and also a programmer.
Wow.
So we had our own Outlook at that time called Memo. Right. And I was also involved in 1984 when we decided to go to CAD drawings instead of manual drawings. That was early.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that Volvo Cars have really put me into the digital world and understanding a lot about that, how it works. But we can go on into details later.
Yeah.
At Volvo, I was head of product planning for engines.
Right.
And strategic planning for engines. I was also head of the environmental center. I also was in head of Volvo Monitoring Concept Center, a think tank in Los Angeles, where we really were in the cutting edge technology in all disciplines.
Right.
And of course, one of the biggest ones there was actually artificial intelligence. And this was in the late 90s.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Then I left Volvo after being head of quality because cars was to a point not so interesting.
Yeah.
And then I went to the Swedish Confederation of Enterprise, which is an employer organization, more than 55,000 companies, and I was the senior vice president for many what you call policy areas, including ICT as well. But that was one of them. But I left that in 2006, and since then I've been working mostly in boards, but also as you said, advice, etc. And some of the companies that I are in now are really in high tech. One of them is Micronic, which is really in the electronic industry and the digital industry. And the other one is the Data Response in Norway. Also embedded systems, Internet of Things, machine learning, etc.
Yeah. So. Now, as we were talking before we started the podcast, all these companies that you mentioned, also the companies that I work with, are traditionally, so I often refer to as metal bending companies, and they are becoming digital companies, or they need to become digital companies. Now, the problem with is that this whole concept, this word of digitalization, is such a broad and generic term. So what does digitalization mean for you? How do you view this?
That's why I said that in 1984, I think I learned what digitalization was, because actually it's about that you have the technology. The technology is ready to do things for you as a company or as an individual.
Right.
So in 1984, we had these CAD drawings instead of manual drawings. But what we did then was actually to transform the way of working. And not only saying that we did it digitally, it was also a different way of working, because the digitalization is not only about technology, it's a new way of thinking.
Yeah.
And I think that since I prepared myself a little bit before this, I said, what is it that is different? Well, it's the accuracy, it's traceability, it's measurables, and there are so many things that, and also in the end, quality. So by going digital, you have to think through how you do things, you know, because otherwise you get lost. So the way the processes, the way of working, the way of acting is different in a digital world. Although in the end you have a result that is more or less the same, but more efficient.
Yeah.
But the way from manual to digital is... I think most people haven't thought through that. It's really to understand bits and pieces in how you work.
Yeah.
And also what you're aiming for.
Yeah.
Why do you do this?
Yeah. So the interesting thing is that you mentioned the CAD drawings, which for me is the first phase of digitalization, where for every, for instance, car model, you would create a digital model.
Yeah.
But now we see that every car instance, every car itself has a digital twin.
Isn't it fantastic?
I think
I love it, you know.
And even we are now moving, you are sitting there with your Fitbit, even humans are getting a digital twin. It's actually funny. And that brings me to the next question, because what I notice is that many people are talking about the impact of digitalization on companies.
Yeah.
But not that many people are thinking about what does this mean for individuals?
Yeah.
What does it mean for me in my professional job? What does it mean for me as a citizen? What does it mean for me as a private person? I mean, what does digitalization mean for people rather than companies? So what's your view on that?
I think one of the things is going with the way you communicate with authorities, for example. Now, everybody here has a bank ID, and on that, I mean, you can access a lot of not only the authorities but also the banks, etc. And it gives you a way of communicating with and interact when you want it, how you want to do it.
Yeah.
You're not depending on that. There's somebody else sitting there waiting for you to understand what you're heading at. And I also think that with artificial intelligence, and you know that when you write your questions, etc., there's a lot of things that has been already asked for, and the answers are more or less automatic. But I think that we are now in a transition where artificial intelligence is there, that you can ask more and more specific questions and get more and more accurate answers. So that is one aspect in the communication with authorities or companies, you know, services, etc.
And not only that, it's not just that we get better answers when we ask. My feeling is that there also is a shift taking place from me taking the initiative.
Yes, of course.
Going to the computer taking the initiative and asking me to respond to it. So
but
there's a shift of initiation. Of
That's one of things, you know. And the other thing is that also that things that you are interested in measuring yourself, like I have this Fitbit now, that's just a small thing, but I think that we have just seen the very early start of. It's really in when it comes to wellness and health.
Yes.
Which is the next revolution, I think. But because the Internet of Things and the fourth generation, you know, IT 4.0, etc., to me, that started way back. It's more that the technology is there now, the sensors, etc., are developed. They are tinier, they are smaller, and you can do a lot of things. It's more about doing it.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the health, there you also have that it's not only about the digitalization as such, it's also about the morals, the individual integrity, etc. How far can this go? And I think that those of us who embrace this, we're not so worried about integrity as such, but in the future, if the digitalization means that somebody can sit there, you can sit there, mm-hmm. and you can program my little chip that I have inside my body, and you can steer my heart beams. Oh, I wouldn't want that to happen. No. So it's real about that technology makes a lot of things more available and possible that you can even imagine. And I always say to people, go and watch the sci-fi movies, because they are there. For example, the things that about sensor, I will never forget, you know, when I saw this first film, that somebody was just entering a door and it opened. Today, you know,
you don't even think about it.
No, and you know, if they don't open, I have smashed my head into the doors because they didn't open.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what it means to do you as an individual. You expect things to work in a certain way, and I expect to be connected all the time.
Yeah,
I expect, you know, to be connected. That's But I think that it will also change in the future.
So if I talk about professionals, people working at companies, what do you see as the biggest impact around that is driven by digitalization?
I think that you have access to information.
Yeah.
And I remember this way back that that access to information gives you power. And you can always look for answers yourself. You don't have to go to your boss. You don't have to go to the expert.
Yeah.
And now it's about understanding the information.
Yeah.
And that's where the differences will be in the future. How you can condense what's out there and make sense of it.
So last week I did a two-day session with a company in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. I won't mention the name, but they're very successful. And we started day two with asking people to define what it would take for their job to become completely automated.
Okay, easy.
But that is one of the worries that many people have, right?
I don't have that worry.
No.
No, I think that what this means that maybe we have to again be more philosophical.
Right.
And it's time that we think about what we're doing, you know. So to me it's like, oh great, now we will have time to solve all the environmental problems that we've created, you know, and all the other stuff that we created is not working. So to me it's terrific.
Yeah.
Get rid of who wants to do the washing by hand?
Yeah, no, not me. That's
no, and the same, you know, who wants to fill in a form by hand?
Yeah.
No. So I think that we have to embrace this and see that now it's the next, it's opening up for us to have more important things to do than filing documents or whatever it's what we have to do, you know.
So the boring, repetitive work, we can automate.
And some also about the looking for answers, looking for statistics, you know, because a lot of things that we do now with big data or for marketing reasons, etc., you're collecting a lot of information and then you're trying to do something good with that.
Yeah.
And that, it's automatic. Good. And then I have to look at it, and then I have to make up my strategy, of course.
Right. Yeah.
Who is it that I want to address, and what problem would I like to solve for the customer? But then the rest is like, now, we are so many challenges in the world.
So if you look at young people, your own kids or my kids or whatever, that are going to be living in this digital world, because I feel that we're only at the very beginning of this fourth industrial revolution that we call digitalization. What would be the key advice that you would give them? What do you think would be things that people have to be aware of?
First of all, let your kids be on the net.
Yeah.
You should encourage them to do gaming. They will learn a lot about strategic thinking, etc. But as an adult, you have to be there with them because you have the ethics. That's what we as adults has to give the young ones. But the technology, it's there to be used. I mean, I know that when I was young, I used a hammer to hammer nails. I didn't use it to hit people.
No.
And it's not so big similarity maybe, but that the digital world, you know, you have to understand what you do in games and you're killing people in the games. Yeah. You don't go out and kill people. This is a game.
Yeah.
So it's real about understanding when you are in the real world and when you are in the virtual reality world. I think that's the discussion that needs to be faced, not only by parents, but also in the schools.
Yeah.
And in the daycare center as well. Yeah. And there, of course, then you have to put pressure on those who are professional in those areas that they understand this world.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big problem right now, that maybe
if we talk about ethics, what we see is that in online social networks, trolls, or different people are acting as trolls, which clearly means that they perform in ways that they would never even consider in a real world context. And I think that we have a situation where ethics do not translate to the online world from the offline world. So I think that's an interesting one. One of the topics that I was hoping to bring up is in earlier conversations I talked about this BAPO model. The BAPO basically says business and business strategy drives system and software architecture, drives process, ways of working and tools, drives organization. I was hoping to ask for your perspective on some of these things. So if we look at what are the business implications of digitalization as you see it, both for companies and for individuals? I mean, we talked already about metal bending companies that are becoming digital companies. What are the biggest challenges or biggest issues that these companies and individuals are dealing with?
I think that, you know, it's how do you make money? Because it's a business model that will change. If something that a lot of things that in the digital world you give for free, but now we can see that you know you have to pay for Aftonbladet or the Dagens Nyheter or whatever, you know, or you can get it for free, but there are some advertisement in it. But for example, if you are in the metal bending and with that you do something digital. Like taking, for example, a chair and delivering the chair to a car company, and this chair can sort of massage you, etc. How do you get paid for that digital things, you know? Just as an example, which is easy to understand that. Now, it should be every time somebody press the button, like the Google does the click. So this is really tough. This is really interesting. Because I think that here we haven't discussed this and we haven't really thought through, you know, how to make money, because you want everything to be more digital.
Yeah.
But how to get paid for it. Yeah.
So one of the challenges is that whenever an industry goes digital, and I think telecommunications is a nice example.
Yeah.
If you look at international calling and Skype.
Yeah.
Every time the industry goes digital, it seems like 90% of the value in the industry basically vaporizes. Yeah. Because of the efficiency improvements.
Yeah.
I mean, Skype is a fantastic business that made lots of money, but it costed the operators orders of magnitude more, the introduction of Skype, than I think that's one of the challenges, that we have companies that have a business structure and a cost structure for one level of revenue and margin. They go digital, the margin is squeezed, and they are unable or have a great difficulty adjusting their operating model to the new reality.
And I think that one of the sectors that has the biggest challenge right now is the banking area and insurance area. Because the digitalization is such a revolution, you know.
Yeah.
And since it opens up for new business models again. And I think that this has been ongoing for thousands of years, that the structural change in business will happen now. This one is maybe tougher because there is so much value embedded in old companies.
Yeah.
So again, I think that maybe we need to think about investments and checks and balances in different ways. So again, what is growth? And how do you evaluate companies? I think now we are entering into stock markets, etc. How do you really evaluate a company?
Yeah.
And we have now the Snapchat, you know, yeah. on there. I mean, you think about it.
Outrageous valuations compared to old economy.
Yeah, business. And you think about how many people that are involved in doing the old stuff compared with the new stuff. But I think that, again, this has to be, one can't see into the future how this will be. The only thing we know is that it will not be as you and I anticipate. It will be different.
The future is fundamentally unpredictable. There's one topic I wanted to pick up on, because you mentioned banking and insurance. Mm-hmm. Earlier you mentioned healthcare.
Yep.
These industries, I feel, have not been disrupted yet because of a very high level of regulation.
Mm-hmm. Although they have been as well. I think the deregulation of the finance sector opened up a lot. You know, that was some years ago.
Yeah.
And I think that they have opened up in some way. I mean, the way you do banking, you don't go to the bank office any longer. If you're an old person, you do. But they changed their model, you know, they're into something new. But they haven't been disrupted.
No.
Yet. But they are in this disruptive time zone, I would say.
So if you would have to put your money, would you put it on a fintech startup or on an existing bank?
A fintech.
You really think the banks will be disrupted?
Yeah, the way they act right now. Yeah. They have to transform themselves, just like the auto industry did, you know, has done all the time.
Yeah.
I think that's why it's so interesting to look into what the auto industry is doing, because they are really in a tough competitive environment, so much money all the time.
Yeah.
And if you talk about now, you know, you have these autonomous cars driving all over, and now I look forward not to have to drive, I must say.
I'm on exactly the same
way. Again, why should I spend 3 hours driving when I could do something else?
Yeah.
Because it's just a transport.
Yeah.
And again, we are changing the way we define the travel is a transport. It's not, I'm not driving, I'm transporting myself.
Yeah.
So I think the same goes for the health, and also for the health sector, and also the banking sector. It's like, I'm just changing my investment. Why do I have to go to a bank? I'm just taking on my digital money, because I don't have any money. I think I have 10 crowns in my wallet, you know.
Yeah.
I have my cards. I go and see my statement on the bank account.
Yeah.
But it's only digital. It's just numbers.
Yeah.
So why do I need the bank for that?
Yeah.
Well, it's about the legal issue. It's about having the capital in some way defined. But if we define capital in a new way?
Yeah. Yeah. No. So I think that you're spot on, because Uber, I think, is a very interesting example that basically said highly regulated space, taxis, and they basically barged in and said, we don't care about regulations, we're just going to do our thing.
Yeah.
That is one strategy. Other strategies is where companies try to change things from the inside.
Yeah.
But I see that one of the dangers, at least here in Europe, is that we've only been really successful, except for a few exceptions, in highly regulated markets.
Yeah.
And in low regulated markets, we tend to be disrupted by other parts of the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked for Nokia at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
At that point, Europe owned the mobile phone market.
Yeah. But they are going retro.
Yes. So the 3310 is coming out again, which is a good thing.
No.
But I do worry that we have to, also here in Europe, be much better at innovating and disrupting ourselves, even in low-regulated markets.
And be more experimental. I think this is a challenge for Europe, to be more experimental, to go live without knowing everything, and to, you know, try and error more, and not being afraid of failure. And I think that's a good thing with startup companies. That's why fintech, I like that better than the banking, because in the banking, And the way we look at business is like you're not allowed to fail.
Yeah.
And if it's something you do with the digital, you fail and you shut down everything and you start over. Now, that's how we learn that if nothing else works, you know, and have even, you know, thrown out the batteries and plug them in again, you know.
Yeah.
So if there's in a sector where the trial and error is sort of daily business, it's in the digital area.
Yeah.
But then, of course, when you go live, you have to be very accurate, very accurate. And I think this is, and me coming from the outer industry where everything is so regulated, and you're not allowed to fail because, you know, you're
basically start putting your name on the line, on the dotted line.
Yeah, product liability.
Yeah.
And I think the product liability thing is not that discussed, you know, when it comes to digital. Yeah. What is the product liability of Facebook, for example?
Yeah. No, I find it interesting. I listened to a presentation by people from Volvo Cars, and they basically said that when a Volvo car is in autonomous driving mode, Volvo Cars takes the responsibility for the performance of the system.
Yeah,
I'm sure they have an insurance company behind them.
Yeah.
But I think because we are moving to a world where we will have continuous deployment of new functionality, even in safety critical systems. So also product liability and certification and security issues will become a continuous matter, which I find really interesting.
But one thing that I really think is going to be something that we are really very well, very very aware of is the food process. And I think that when it comes to traceability of not only stuff, you know, that we buy, clothes and other things, but also the food. Because I think that that's connected to the health issue that we would like to know what are we putting into our bodies, and that we have only scrapped on that.
Right. Yeah.
So I mean, think about the packaging of food, for example.
Yeah.
That will be a sort of a revolution there, because the customer and also I think the authorities will ask for regulations there that. Is the food, where is it packaged, where did it grow, you know, where do you sell it, etc. They want to know the whole chain.
So we get to the digital twin again.
Yes.
Every package will have its own digital twin, basically.
Yes.
If we go to, I know you have an engineering background, so if we look at the architecture of products as we digitize, or of architecture of platforms, or of product portfolios, what do you see as the main implications from an architectural perspective?
I think that this enabling technologies, I thought about this before we met. I think that what the world is asking for is applications.
Right.
But not the enabling technologies. Because the application is easier, it's what you meet in the digital world.
Mm-hmm.
But the structure, as you said, the architecture beneath that, the algorithm and all that stuff that is needed in order to do an application. I think that we need much, much more research.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where the government should put a lot of money into, you know, understanding and developing this architecture, because I don't think that we have enough of professors like you, into this area. No, I'm very serious about this, because once you have that, then we will understand better how to interact. And I think it's more complicated, the infrastructure that is the really the first segment in this digitalization, because the application and the use of application, that's the top line, you know.
Yeah.
But the basics, that's where we need to much more research.
Right.
Much more research.
So let me share what I often mention around system architecture.
Mm-hmm.
Traditional system engineers tend to try to put as much into mechanical engineering as possible, and only then do they put things in hardware, electronics.
Mm-hmm.
And only if they can really not avoid it, they put it in software. And what I what I recommend companies is to do it exactly the other way around.
Yeah.
Put as much in software as you can,
mm-hmm.
If you have to put things in electronics, then put it in FPGAs, not in ASICs, so you have more post-deployment flexibility, and keep the mechanics as simple and as modular and as easily replaceable as possible. Does that resonate with you?
It does it 100%, because the mechanical is just something that is changeable.
Yeah.
I mean, there might be some mechanical things that could be hard to do in a digital world, but I would say that the steering of the mechanical things, or the process, I would say, it's not only the process, the mechanical things, also the process, how you do things, should be in the software. And that's why, again, I think that this research is really needed, because I think that we look at the mechanical things, and then we tend to think, what application could I do digital on this one?
Yeah.
Instead of thinking through, you know, the whole problem and say, if I go digital from the beginning, how would I do this? And that's when you have the digital revolution, because then you change the way you're working.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just, you know, like having a new wallpaper.
And that's nice, but not
nice. And you maybe you could do some little extra, you know, that. But it's not the real change.
So if we focus on if we switch focus to processes and ways of working.
Yeah.
One of the things that I see in digitalization is that it typically allows me to increase the number of loops or feedback loops that I go through with one or two orders of magnitude. I often compare the build, measure, run loop that you see in the lean startup for a new car. A new car says 36 months, so every 3 years I go through a build, measure, learn loop once. If I deploy new software in a car every week, I basically have a feedback loop that is two orders of magnitude faster, basically, right? So once a week versus once every 150 weeks or something. So for me, that really changes the way that we work and the way that we think about processes. And I'd love to have your view on that. Do you see something similar?
Yeah, I think that there are new versions of the applications and the tools coming out, you know, all the time. I mean, whenever I close my new Surface Pro 4, this is not this type, but I have a Surface at home. It says, you know, it's going to download new versions. And I think that's the way the world is, that you get sort of a sign that something is happening automatically. And I trust the system. So I think here it has to do with a lot of trust. And of course, in order to be able to trust this system, you have to have some knowledge and insight. I think that here is way back we talked about techs have and techs no have. Those who are into the technology and those who are out. I think that we maybe should talk dig haves and digs not have, digitalization. People who are into this or not into it. And of course, the whole system, the whole thinking of digitalization is also built on electricity.
It's hard to run software.
It's really hard to do anything here without having electricity. I mean, that's the really, 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 really hard thing. But I think that in ways of working for companies, normal companies, you expect things to go faster, more efficient, more smoother. And I would say that most boards and executive committees, managers and employees, they expect things to be more efficient. The new ones are coming into companies most of them, I think, are a little bit shocked that things are not as digital as they expect it to be. So I think that the push for this is there. While then we have also the disabilities, you know, people that can't read or write, because they can't hear or see, or they can't touch, etc. I think here we have some challenges. So, and therefore, I'm really looking forward to artificial intelligence coming into the areas and take away some of the stuff that are really unnecessary in this digital world we have right now when it comes to processes, etc. For example, as you say, touch your touch pin.
Right. Yeah.
Why should I do that? I have my thumb.
Yeah.
This is my identification. When I take the passport and my thumbs are there, why can't I use my thumb for everything?
Yeah.
Or my retina or whatever it is. So I think that some of the solutions that are there now are unnecessary because they are in between solutions for the final solution.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, the way I look at it is that in traditional processes, if you look at waterfall, there is a series of activities that happen in a sequence.
What
we now see is actually that everything happens in parallel. Then I do my requirements and elicitation and my architecture evolution and my development and my testing.
But here we have a problem. Here we have a problem. And that is that in the political world, now, which I am into, I didn't think about it like you said it. To me, it's so obvious that you can do everything in parallel.
Yeah.
Because that's how I've been working all my life at Volvo. You look for different kind of solutions, and you don't know which one will be the winner until then. But in the political world, where everything is a negotiation, I think that the digital world is very easy in that way, that you always look for the best solution.
Yeah.
And the optimal solution from a model point of view. That's why, again, the artificial intelligence and so on. But in the political world, where you have also we don't have in the digital world, you have values.
Right.
And how do you do digitalize values and empathy, morals?
So I read a book, I think it's Sam Harris, who gives a systematic scientific approach to building a moral framework where you can actually compare different cultures and say that certain cultures are better than others because they deliver more on individual freedom, longevity of health, avoidance of violence, those kinds of things. But that's perhaps a little bit beyond today's discussion.
We take that in another podcast.
But it does bring me to the organizational implications.
Yep.
You already, earlier in this recording, you alluded to the fact that people have access to a lot more information, which gives them the opportunity to take many more decisions locally without involvement of a hierarchy of managers.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and in addition to that, if we look at modern companies, they tend to be much more cross-functional team-oriented than traditional functional hierarchy oriented. So how do you view the future of organizations? What happens to hierarchies and managers? To what extent do you feel that self-managed?
I think that it is with self-managed organization is very okay, but then you have to agree on that that's the way you should do. And again, it's about making people feel secure in that system. And also that if you're self-organized, how do you know that the information is spread? How do you know that it's the decision is accepted, etc.? It's a different way of working. I think that if you go to big companies that have been around, or old companies, even there if they're small, that have been around for a while, I think you should think twice before you experiment too much. I think it's better than to take it in steps and make pilots around a project or something like that. But as a concept, I'm all for it. But again, you have to know where you come from in order to know where you're going. So that's it.
So we need to start wrapping up. So I have two final questions. The first is, what do you read, and what do you think is worth recommending to the listeners?
I think that you should read. I have a lot of newsletters that I read.
Interesting.
Since I have been in the auto industry, you know, I do that kind of. I have these newsletters, and I think that reading newsletters that you find fun.
Yeah.
And enjoyable. And then you start there when it comes to the digital world, because it's if you have not been in it, It's quite a big hurdle to step over.
Any specifics that you can recommend?
Well, I have this. I have them here, but in English, what do you call them? Then newsletter from the Victoria Institute, for example.
Right.
Yeah. And you have Elektronik in the Elektronik tidningen in English, what that is. And I have also McKinsey's. I read Roland Berger's. I read also Harvard Business Reviews. And then, of course, you can. Then I have some technical magazines, etc. That I follow. But I think that if you should start, start where you're in something small that you are interested in. If you're interested in health, there are e-health stuff you can find on the net. So I think that go on the net and find the things that you are interested in and look for digitalization and start there.
Yeah. Finally, if I'm a digital professional or I want to become even better at what I do or even feel that I'm not very good at digital but I want to become much better, what would be the three things that you would recommend to this?
Well, I thought about this, but I think that it's the important thing is you do something, you know, and that you stay curious. And I think that in today's world where people feel that they have to do so much things, you know, that in order to stay curious, you have to get more information about. And if you haven't started, do it now. The second thing I say is that you have to stay alert. Watch out for things like Internet of Things. You have the big data. You have machine learning, and you have Industry 4.0. You have virtual reality. You have artificial intelligence. And I think that I could highly recommend to follow the what's happening in robotics when it has to do with human beings, because if you haven't been into the digital world, I think this is where you can sort of connect yourself, because a robot is something similar to you as a human being. You can understand the concept easier than talking about big change or bitcoins or whatever, you know. So I think that robotics is something I would learn. And then I think that the last thing I would recommend was to be very open-minded, and especially to those people who are out of the box thinking and acting, and think about crossover solutions, solutions, learn from other sectors, and don't say we've done this before, because you haven't.
Good. Willibert, thank you so much for agreeing to be part of this podcast. I'm really looking forward to the responses of the listeners. And you know, I think that we need to follow up on this at some point, because I think we have way too much stuff that we didn't even manage to cover.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Digital You podcast. If you want to stay informed of my upcoming podcasts, blog posts, videos, books, courses, and research articles, go to my website at www.janbosch.com or send me email at jan@janbosch.com. Join the mailing list and receive regular updates that help you become a digital leader.